Hello and welcome to the Clinical Care Options Infectious Disease Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Anderson. Today's episode features content from an educational program titled Contemporary Management of HIV 2021. During this podcast, Dr. Geeta Gupta, Professor, University of California, Irvine, and Director, AIDS Education and Training Center, discusses ART management in heavily treatment-experienced patients. For more information about Dr. Gupta and for a link to the full online educational program, including downloadable slides specific to today's podcast, please visit the link in the show notes for today's episode. Now, let's get started and hear what Dr. Gupta has to say about ART management in heavily treatment-experienced patients.
How do we use the drugs that are in our existing classes? And some drugs that there are mutations toward seem to still help. For example, the NRTI. So this was a very interesting study of patients that failed their first regimen, which was NNRTI based. So NNRTI plus two nucleoside analogs. Then they end up on PI therapy. And so what they did was they gave patients PI plus NRTIs, either one, two, or three, or they gave them no NRTIs and put raltegravir on. And the third was just PI monotherapy. Because if you have mutations to NRTIs and you use those same NRTIs with a new drug like the protease inhibitor, is that the same as just giving the protease inhibitor? Because you can say, well, those drugs don't work anyway because of the mutations. So this study gave us information on that question. So you can see here that even, here's the blue line, patients who were on no active NRTIs, but were on NRTIs, plus the PI, had a better response than PI monotherapy. So again, we know monotherapy is not the way to go. You can see the green line here. As time goes on, fewer and fewer patients remain suppressed, and you will find that these patients will gather cumulatively more PI mutations. But even though NRTIs may be inactive, they do support some of the regimen and give a better outcome. And that might be due to decreased viral fitness. We can speculate as to the reasons for that, but that can give us some comfort to know that adding that 3TC or FTC when you have the 184 mutation is not like just adding water. There can be some activity. Now, dolutegravir, we usually dose dolutegravir QD, but in resistance patients, BID is recommended. Here, we see the activity against of dolutegravir BID in patients who had baseline INSTI mutations. When they had no mutations, you see the results here. Dark blue is 24 weeks, light blue is 48 weeks. So I'm just going to take that as a group, the two bars as a group. When you have the Q148 plus an additional mutation, and generally that would be a mutation at 140 or 138, you see a drop off. And when you add two mutations, you see a much greater drop off. So if you need to use dolutegravir in a patient that has a resistance mutation to INSTI, we use it BID. Now, darunavir actually is the same way. Darunavir, when it first came out, was marketed and tested as a BID drug. And getting those higher levels in patients who have some darunavir-associated mutations is considered the right way to go. So if you don't have any darunavir-associated mutations, which are you can see here on this chart, you can give it once daily, for example, with cobicistat, so it's a single tablet regimen. But otherwise, you need to give it twice daily, boosted with ritonavir or cobicistat if you prefer. So again, the goal is two and preferably three fully active agents. So in our case that we were discussing before, the fully active agents we know could be ibalizumab and fostemsavir. You could use both. You could use one. Here's where the art of medicine comes in. Other options would be boosted darunavir because we saw the interpretation, the resistance interpretation as intermediate resistance. So it could have some activity. maybe it would not be classified as a fully active agent, but a partially one. We've seen that NRTIs can add benefit, even though their mutations are present that confer resistance, and possibly dolutegravir BID. So how you put these together is going to depend on you and your patient. If your patient says, no way am I coming in every 2 weeks for an IV infusion, ends up off the table. So that's how we would approach that patient. And now it's time to go to our second patient, who in this case is a virologically suppressed patient, but has some underlying resistance. How do we manage these patients? The previous patient, we were able to get that genotype and basically work from there. Here, we will not have that. So here's the case. He's a 48-year-old man diagnosed with HIV in 2012 with pneumocystis pneumonia, and his CD4 count was only 22 at that time. He was put on the combination single tablet regimen efavirenz FTC-TDF, and he had good suppression for about a year or so, but then he had poor adherence, he was using substances, and this led to viral rebound. And at that time, a genotypic test was done, and it showed what we would expect from that regimen, the mutations of the K103N, so high-level efavirenz resistance, M184V, so high-level FTC and lamivudine resistance. So what did they do? They switched him. They switched him to three active drugs, atazanavir boosted with ritonavir, along with raltegravir, and a switch to, or actually a continuation of FTC-TDF. And the patient got suppressed, although he did have some mild diarrhea, which was treated with loperamide, and he was okay. 4 years later, he was still suppressed. They modernized, you could say, his regimen from the PI atazanavir. They went to darunavir. From raltegravir, they went to, which is a BID drug, they went to daily dolutegravir, and they kept the FTC-TDF. And now his CD4 count is 418. He still gets some of this diarrhea. And now he says, hey, I'd like to change my regimen so I don't have this diarrhea anymore. His viral load is undetectable. So what are the things we have to consider when we're switching patients who are virologically suppressed? Well, we want to review their antiviral therapy and their resistance tests. Of course, we don't want to choose drugs that they are resistant to. And very often, these are patients that may have had a resistance test elsewhere and it's inaccessible to us. They're a newer patient to us. And so we have to try to get that past resistance assay result, or we have to infer things and suppose things by doing a complete antiviral history. And I know that there are a lot of pharmacists in the audience, and we certainly appreciate your help at finding out what that history is. We don't want to switch a regimen just because it's newer if there's a risk of failure, obviously. This is not what we want. And just because a drug is newer on the market doesn't mean that the patient may have some resistance to it, depending on the individual situation. Generally, if a patient is on an agent within a class and you switch within that class an equivalent agent with the same barrier to resistance, that's usually a good choice and will do a very good job for the patient. Switching from class to class, we have some data, and it can depend on the barrier to resistance of the drugs that you're switching from and to that will have some impact on whether you have a successful regimen or not. But can you get any resistance data? And the answer is yes, you can by doing that archival proviral DNA genotype. But remember, this assay is less sensitive than a regular genotype or phenotype. In fact, when it was possible in studies where patients were viremic, and so you could get the usual population genotypic test, as well as a proviral DNA test was done, a genotype was done. The concordance between the two varied by study from 26% concordance to 84% concordance. So you can see how varied it may be. This particular study 1824, had patients switch to elvitegravir-based regimen who already had an M184V. They were virologically suppressed. So it was on a previous resistance assay that that 184V was identified. In these patients, again, virologically suppressed, they do the DNA assay, the archive assay, and only 48%, so let's say half of them, in half of them was the M184V detected. But we know it's there because we had a previous assay, that genotypic assay that showed it. So this is just to show you that we can get information from archival DNA genotyping, but it can miss some or even all pre-existing mutations. So what is there on the DNA genotypic archival test gives us information, and we can be sure that the patient definitely has those mutations, but they could have more. So it doesn't tell you everything. So switching from a suppressed regimen to a single tablet regimen, we're doing a lot of that. We've done a lot of that over the past few years. And there are a lot of different studies you can see here on the left that tested that exact thing, and they were very successful. However, there were only just a few of them that allowed or permitted the patients that were switched from this, you know, multi-drug regimen to have some resistance. Generally, most of these studies had patients that were completely sensitive on a regimen that was virologically suppressed, and you just switched them over. We wouldn't have expected those patients to have developed any mutations, since they were virologically suppressed the entire time. And so the fact that this is successful is, you know, kind of a no-brainer. Yeah, we expect that. And there are a few studies that looked at some resistance that we can maybe extrapolate, but patients with a lot of resistance, we still need more information. And this study, the SwitchMark study, it says here, a cautionary tale between class switches. Patients who were on a boosted PI, lopinavir, ritonavir, either remained on that or got switched to raltegravir. Well, raltegravir is a drug with a lower barrier to resistance than lopinavir, ritonavir. And the patients overall, it looked like they did okay. If they had no history of previous virologic failure, then again, patients did great. But among those that did, there was a difference. And raltegravir, that lower barrier to resistant drug, did more poorly than the lopinavir. So when we switch among the patients with resistance, the DHHS guidelines give us some other recommendations. They said there is some limited within-class switch. Patients who switched from dolutegravir to bictegravir in this study, in these two studies, did fine. Dolutegravir and bictegravir are both drugs with a lot of, are considered high barrier to resistance drugs. So this Dawning trial, I'm going to just kind of go quickly through this so that we have some time for questions. Here, patients were switched to dolutegravir or lopinavir after failing an NNRTI first-line regimen. So this is just a one-time failure. And here, dolutegravir did better than lopinavir. It's a better tolerated drug, et cetera. So we can see here that dolutegravir is a high barrier to resistance drug. And in patients who had a previous M184V that would have put lamivudine or FTC that they were also on as an ineffective drug, I should say, still dolutegravir did better. And this other drug, this other study was just a switch from dolutegravir to bictegravir. We consider these both these drugs, again, to be very equivalent in their potency and in the drug barrier characteristics. And patients with previous resistance to other classes did just as well, as you can see here in the bar graph. And no matter how you cut the data, they did. The two were non-inferior. So to close out this section, remember that if you're going to switch from, in a patient with underlying resistance, if you switch from a high barrier drug resistance drug, like a boosted PI or dolutegravir, to a lower one, that has been shown to cause problems. And we think that that's due to the baseline resistance. But high barrier to high barrier, we have more confidence in that. We're beginning to get some data along those lines. However, there isn't a lot in the way of literature that informs us. So with that, I'll close out our patient. He was switched to dolutegravir FTC-TAF. He was the guy that was on three drugs because he was also on a protease inhibitor, but he was not otherwise resistant. So we dropped off that and the patient did fine. And the patient was then switched from dolutegravir to bictegravir to go to a single tablet regimen. And as we would have expected, remained with stable suppression.
Great. Thank you very much to Dr. Gupta, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. As a reminder, to view the full educational program, Contemporary Management of HIV 2021, on the Clinical Care Options website, click on the link in the show notes for this episode. And please be sure to check back regularly for more episodes on important infectious disease topics. Thank you.